Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go. Hello, Kim Donovan. How the heck are you today, woman?
I am doing fantastic. How are you
doing? I'm good. Thank you very much for being on one of this first few episodes of Suzanne Says. I'm like, so excited to do this.
Had to do it.
Yep. So for all the people who are not blessed as I am to know you, tell us, without mentioning what you do, who are you? Who's Kim Donovan?
Jill of all trades, master of none.
Okay.
I can't say that because some of them I think I have mastered, but yeah, I am a Jill of all trades, journeyer on this wonderful little trip called life.
Yeah, it's a trip too.
Right on. I was just talking with a very, very significant person in my life, and we were talking about how it's kind of interesting that everything we experience it together, and it's like leveling up in this fun little game called life. So it's pretty much what I'm hanging on doing.
Yeah.
And then I get to incorporate wonderful people into my life that you find that you definitely knew from somewhere else, some other time, some other life, because click.
Instant click. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that really was the story with us, wasn't it? I mean,
it was.
I've known you since the fall of 2017. And when did I first come to Indiana? In May of 2018. So, you know, I always laugh at people who say these virtual relationships aren't real, that friends on Facebook aren't real friends. And I think that can be true, but I think it's also up to the individuals to determine the strength and quality of those connections, because you are a prime example of someone who's really important in my world now that 5 years ago I didn't even know existed. But for a group on Facebook to which we both belonged and joined around the same time, I still wouldn't have crossed paths with you any other way.
I think that is true. Granted, at this point in time now, possibly we may have, because of same connections from that core group. But I don't think even just like passing, reading a comment here and there, I don't think that we would have clicked the way we, because that was a fun little safe space to pour out who you really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you accepted me that way, which was something that I had never really experienced much in my life. Thank you for loving my weirdness.
Your weirdnesses are awesome. They're what make you who you are.
I am a conglomeration of unique weirdnesses.
I think that's probably true for most of us, actually. And to the extent that we embrace that, I think that is what lights us up. And I think that too many people try to do like I used to do and hide their light under the bushel for fear of sticking out like a sore thumb, being called weird, being rejected or shunned or whatever, or what is that? You know,
there's a lot of judgment.
Yeah. And I sure don't, you know, in many ways, you and I are like the opposite of opposites in many ways.
Yeah.
And yet, actually, Kim, as I'm just saying this sentence in my head before it comes out my mouth, I realized, had a conversation today earlier with someone about diversity. And I made the comment that, you know, in personal relationships, particularly romantic ones, I've always held the belief that, you know, that old opposites attract thing. I've never had an issue with the differences between two people being a problem. I don't see them as a problem. I see them as an asset to the relationship, because if you're wildly different than me and your perspectives then are wildly different than mine, then together, looking at the same situation, I think we cover more ground than either one of us do on our own, you know? So I've never successfully yet been able to conduct a romantic relationship with a man in that manner. I've certainly picked a lot of opposites of me along the way, because, you know, what's not the same as me fascinates me. And my curiosity is going to be the death of me. I already know that. So, but I embrace that. And there are so many people in my world now that I wouldn't know if I weren't that curious, if I weren't that, oh, yeah, you're different. It's okay. I want to know about that. That's why I'm here asking questions. I can plainly see the ways in which we're the same, but tell me about that, you know? And I've been told that I make people feel like a bug on a board. Oops, sorry.
Yes, sometimes, but not so much anymore, because I, as I have come to know you, I have maybe been desensitized to the directness that you sometimes have, or the directness that I am not used to opening up and sharing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that might be true. And also, I would hope that in there is some measure of recognizing that all my questions come free of judgment. It's truly curiosity driving them.
Absolutely.
You know? So once people understand that I'm not sitting here checking off boxes, giving them a grade, but instead asking questions to learn and understand and not judge, but just learn and understand. And I think that might be part of the desensitization that you're talking about, because I am no less inquisitive today than I was back in then.
You are much better today. So with me, you are much better today at explaining and showing that you have a safe space for me to verbalize all the things I want to puke.
Thank you for that, because I work real hard to do that.
I know.
I know you and I have talked at length about what do we want to be when we grow up. And I don't think either of us really have a definitive answer to that question.
I don't think I've decided yet. I haven't found one thing that makes me want to stay in a space that says, I don't want to do anything else but this. This is what I really, really want to do. All this other stuff, no, I don't want any part of that. I don't want that. I want it all. I want to know it all. I want to do it all.
Yeah.
I feel like I have such a quest for knowledge, information, to experience, to feel, to taste, to grow, that I don't think I'll could be wrong. Might find my spot tomorrow, might find my perfect thing tomorrow. Too much out there. There's too much out there and too many people that, oh, you do what? How do you do that? Tell me.
So curiosity is strong in you too, my friend. Oh, Kelsey Freeze, that we get along so well.
Big surprise. But yeah, and God, it feels like it's taken me forever to get here, but I feel like I have just started and I am such a little, and I am so, so young in this life.
Oh, that's so wild you say that, because I was thinking the other day that my life, when I look in the rearview mirror, there is such a big before and after aspect to who I am versus who I was. And I'm pretty clear that there was not one, like there's not one date I can point at that said, yep, that was the day it all changed. But I can point at Good Friday, 1993.
What happened?
That's the day that my second husband pinned me to the wall by my neck and told me he was taking me out. And
And it wasn't for dinner, was it?
No, it wasn't for dinner. And I have this really visceral memory of being stuck on that wall. And now, mind you, he was very strong. He had been a boxer, and I am no slouch. Gravity has a great hold on me. So for him to have been able to accomplish pinning me to the wall where my feet didn't touch the floor, truly by my neck, that was a feat of strength, no doubt empowered by how angry he was at me at the moment. But I remember having this, like, time slowed down. And I remember thinking, if I get off this wall, shit is changing for real. I found out that year that in Oklahoma, you can't get a divorce if you're pregnant. You have to wait and have the baby first.
God, wow.
Yeah. I was 4 months pregnant when that happened. And you can best believe Monday, I was calling a lawyer. And they had to deliver the bad news that, no, ma'am, in fact, you're going to have to wait to deliver that child first. Then we'll talk to you all day long about getting divorced. May 26, 2006 was another day like that, where I got a taste of just how powerful the idea of thoughts are things is, when we woke up at 4:30 in the morning to the house on fire on Lexi's 7th birthday. I sat on the neighbors, they have a ramp from their front porch to the street because the people that lived in that house before had someone in a wheelchair. And I remember sitting on that ramp about 5:30 in the morning, watching firemen running it out of my house, thinking, oh my God, I'm an arsonist. Because Monday of that week, my youngest father and I had a big blowout. I told him, I'm done. I can't do this life with you anymore. I need you to leave, get your stuff and get out of here. And he wouldn't go. He told me he didn't have anywhere to go and he wasn't going. And so his answer to that conflict was to go to work Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and leave me alone and give me time to calm down. And I would, you know, we were coming up on Memorial Day weekend and give her time to calm down, chill. We got a holiday weekend coming up. It'll be fun. It'll blow over, you know, just another day in the life of, and I'm like, uh-uh. All I did all week long that week was pray. That is the one week of my life that I really remember consciously praying, God, please. Because I had told him in the argument that I was so done, I was willing to stop paying the mortgage and let them foreclose on me. And when the sheriff came to evict us, kids and I go one direction, he could go wherever. And if you're not willing to go, I'll give up this house to get out from under the same roof as you. That's how committed I am to being done here. And all week long, I kept remembering that, having said that to him, and I meant it. Oh, did I mean it when I said it? But I'm like, I don't want to have to do that. Please find me another way. Please find me another way. And holy crap, found me another way. Burned down the house. Guess what? You got to move out for the summer while they rebuild the house. And that provided because the other thing I was really clear on is, I wasn't going to do it Jerry Springer style. I wasn't calling the cops and having him hauled out in front of his daughter. I wasn't doing that. And I got my line of demarcation that I needed to get him out of the house. And yeah, we spent the summer in an apartment here in town while they rebuilt the house. And I told him the whole way through, no, when you move back, you're not coming. You need to figure out a plan. You got however many months until the house is done, because I'm done. I've been done. And I've told you that. And I'm not changing my mind. I'm not going backwards. So right up to the night before the kids and I moved home, he was thinking I was joking and found out the hard way that I wasn't when I asked him where I was taking him, and moved back home and realized at that moment that, you know, if you really, really want something and you're willing to do the things that you can do to facilitate that, the rest of the how works out if you're really committed to it. Because what I saw happen in that summer was I was truly done at a bone marrow level, like done. Not so much with him. I needed that situation to change. I did not want to be live-in couple you know, coupled up with him anymore. We had a daughter. I knew that I couldn't be done with him. But the situation we had to change, and I couldn't put any more into it, and change indeed it did. And so that's why I was sitting there that morning thinking, holy cow, talk about an answered prayer. Look at me. Not only do I not have to lose my house, I'm now going to have the house I saw in my head when I looked at this sucker and said, yes, I want to buy that. I got to rebuild it from the, like, we took it down to the studs. I could stand in my front yard and see the backyard through the studs. That's down to the foundation. I mean, I'm on a crawl space, so down to that. And the framing and the west end of the house had to be reframed a little bit because that's where, you know, the laundry room burnt through a bunch of that. But the rest of it was just heavy smoke and water damage. So they took it all down to the studs, and literally from the skin out, I got a new house and got to pick the colors and the carpet and tile and the everything. It's the, I hope, the one and only time, apart from saying I'm going to go build my dream house somewhere, that I actually got to pick everything from the paint color to the, do I want textured walls or not, to what pattern of silverware am I putting in my silverware drawer? It was a real experience to see everything that you own end up in a big ass dumpster in your front yard, though. That was interesting.
That happened to something similar. We were renting an apartment, and there was a fire on the third floor up in the attic, and we were the third floor. So.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much got trashed, waterlogged, and we got to go through it and pick out what things were salvageable, if anything was, and the rest they just shoved out the patio door into a dumpster.
Yep. So that is a before and after marker in my life. And more recently, February 19th, 2021 was another one where nothing as dramatic as that happened, except for someone exiting my life in a grand fashion, but I also saw very clearly that, you know, I knew where we were headed. I knew what was happening. And I was willing, for the first time in an adult relationship, I mastered walking up to the line in the middle and standing there saying, here I am, meet me here. And when they didn't or couldn't or wouldn't, okay, that's information. And acted accordingly. And I didn't even have to have a big dramatic, you know, conversation or argument or anything for that to be done. It just became readily apparent that, you know, and triggered, he was triggered, certainly, but I was calm and I was sad, but not surprised. And that one, you know, that one, I think, like all three of those events in my life kind of meld together in my mind as this one event where, even though they were separate and years apart from each other, when depending on the aspect of myself that I'm talking about or thinking about in any given moment, they all kind of joined together to become that marker of before and after. And it's amazing to me. I feel like I've wasted a bunch of time doing things the hard way and doing things the wrong way.
I don't think there is a wrong way.
Oh, the wrong way with respect to where I said I was trying to get to in my life. I took a lot of side trips that, yes, make me who I am today. And I'm really grateful for that. I love her. I look in the mirror now and I'm like, God, you're pretty cool, woman. You know, you're not bad looking for 57. You got a lot going on for you. You're really smart. You're a really good friend. When you love hard and fierce. And let somebody mess with somebody you love. You'll see the crazy come out. And, you know, I would pick me for a best friend. And I think that's new in my life, you know, to really understand, yeah, I would pick me for a best friend. And how convenient is it that I have me right here? I can pick her. Isn't that great? And the ramifications of doing that. Like actually choosing myself as my best friend, what does that do to how you live your life?
It's really hard to look in the mirror and like you, knowing all of the good things and all of the quote unquote bad things you've done. Not you yourself, but looking in the mirror and saying, you know what? You're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're damn okay.
It is hard to do that, but once you can, it's real easy. At least that's my experience. Leading up to being able to do that felt impossible.
Because you had not learned the wonderful art of forgiveness.
Yeah, I thought I had, but you're right. Maybe that's what finally clicked.
It's really hard to forgive. And I think it's something that you have to sometimes revisit a few times.
Oh, yeah.
You've mastered it. You get a little hair trip you up. It's like, guess I need a little bit more work on that today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a friend of mine, Landon, is always talking about how life is constantly showing us, if we're paying attention, life will show us where we're not free.
So I've got this little quote up on my computer. Mm-hmm. And it's attributed to Lao Tzu. Is that how you say it? Lao Tzu?
I think so, but I don't know for sure.
And it is, be careful what you water your dreams with. Water them with worry and fear, and you will produce roots that choke the life of your dream. Water them with optimism, Water them with optimism and solutions, and you will cultivate success. Always be on the lookout for ways to turn a problem into an opportunity for success. Always be on the lookout for ways to nurture your dream.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that I have really worked hard on in trying to find the silver lining. People have told me that I'm this like little Pollyanna, everything's always happy-go-lucky, hunky-dory, and that's not it at all.
No.
Life can suck, and suck big time, but in all of that shit, if you can't find one thing to be positive about, to be grateful for, thank you for showing me the way, thank you for showing me this, what not to do, how not to be, what not to say, then I think you've totally missed that whole life lesson.
Oh yeah, I would submit that Abraham Lincoln, I think, is who said, nothing is either good or bad, it's thinking that makes it so.
Yes.
I totally believe that, because what happens to us, I mean, the kids play opposite day, you know, no matter what's going on with me there, I truly believe somewhere in the other 7,999,000 whatever million people minus me on the planet, there's somebody in that 8 billion people who would kill for exactly what I'm dealing with.
Right on.
You know, so the thing that I'm dealing with is not good or bad on its own. It's how I'm judging it. It's how I'm seeing it. It's how
perspective.
Yeah, it's all perspective, and mastering paradox and the ability to hold conflicting truths at the same time, I think, are the keys to understanding that something shows up that most people would qualify as, oh, that's really good. It doesn't come free of cost. It doesn't come with no strings attached. There's always something that is degrading elsewhere because of that thing. Conversely, I also believe all tragedy brings gifts with it as well.
Cause and effect.
Yeah, but it really proves to me that is true. Nothing is good or bad in and of itself. It's how we think about it that determines that. So if we can truly only control what we think, what we say, what we do, and how we respond to events and things outside us, then it logically, it's up to me to, that's how happiness is an inside job.
Agreed. 100%.
And
because you cannot, it is all your interpretation, all your perspective, because what one person might think of is, oh my God, that was such a sweet thing to do. You have no idea what is going on the other side.
Yeah.
So you perceive isn't necessarily what that same person is feeling at the moment for reasons and causes that you have known nothing about.
Right.
All right. Our job.
Right.
All up to you. It's up to us as individuals.
Yeah.
To be happy or to be positive. Not to say that.
You know, actually, I think it goes deeper than that. We are in charge of the quality of our lives. Period. End of story. No matter what the hell's going on around us. No matter what outside forces, yeah, tornadoes come through Oklahoma all the time, and I'm sitting duck for having my house leveled. It hasn't happened yet, and it may not happen to me, but it has certainly happened with frequency here to others. And, you know, I look backward, and the most horrific times in my life, the hardest points of my life, were not only the ones that shaped me, but they're the ones from which I actually derive happiness. It's not the easy stuff. I don't think it's the easy stuff that happens in our lives that creates true appreciation or true joy. They can, but I don't think it's only those things. I think without the struggle and the overcoming of the things that we overcome in our lives, that for me is what really makes me feel empowered. And empowerment is a huge piece of happiness for me, because if I don't feel like I have agency in my life, shoot me now. And as long as I've got my brain, I've got agency, because I can determine my perspective. I can determine what this meaning of this thing, or that someone said, or someone did, or something that happened, I can interpret what that means in my world. So as long as I've, and that's why, you know, probably the only thing, I'm not necessarily afraid of death. Death would piss me off right now. I'm not done here, but I'm not necessarily afraid of it. Once again, because I'm so damn curious, I can't wait to see what comes next. But please, Lord, don't leave me here with Alzheimer's, because I need to know who I am and have faculties and my brain working with me.
I'm there too. Yeah. Like I said, I am, I just feel like I am on such a quest, so all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm a Gemini. We have this reputation of being shallow and flighty and bumping from one thing to the next. And, you know, certainly my healthy curiosity fits that bill, right? But I submit that you are not a Gemini in any stretch of the form. You're a Taurus. And I would say you and I have the same level, maybe directed differently, but we have the same sense of curiosity about life and living. And we have the same bullheadedness.
Interesting to compare our charts to see if we have any planets in the same house.
Oh, maybe. Maybe we do.
Because I don't think we share a rising sign, and I don't think our how the world sees us and how we deal with how our emotional life is. I don't think we're a little different there, but we are so similar in how we take it upon ourselves to figure things out, to gain.
I agree with that.
It would be interesting. There's another show.
There's a whole other conversation, that's for sure. So to that point, though, in this conversation, I think you just described why it is I say we are so opposite in so many ways, because we really are.
Yes.
And particularly from, I think, I don't know if you agree with this, but from the perspective of others looking on, that's where the areas that affect that are where our differences show up the most, because we do have an awful lot in common as well. But I think those are more inside in thinking, in ways of looking at the world, or at least maybe not, our perspectives are not so much the same about things, but we approach differences in the same way that's compatible. So I don't feel like, I know you and I don't agree on, I can't even think of something that you and I fundamentally don't agree on right now, but I know that they exist, but
somewhere there's gotta be one.
Yeah. And they show up and I go, oh yeah, that's, she's not the same as me. How about that? But I don't ever feel like
carrots. That's our main difference right there.
Carrots. Oh, carrots. Yeah. I love carrots. And that's great, because when we're together, I get all the carrots. Yeah, and you can have all the avocado. Yep,
I will gladly.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I don't get the sense that because of our differences, we can't find common ground. And we are particularly skilled at that. I know early on, I haven't seen that stricken look on your face in a long time in a conversation with me. I used to see it fairly frequently. But, you know, maybe that's just good communication and understanding taking place, and not adoption, but understanding. you know?
And I like to think too that my eyes have been opened a little bit more, and I have grown past to have seen and understood other things that are beyond my experience.
Mm, yeah.
Because growing up, we grew up completely different. I lived in this little box and was very sheltered and couldn't do this and couldn't do that. And you, on the other hand, you had much more freedom and maybe not as controlled.
Probably not as controlled. And I was yanked around in high school, and weren't you in one spot?
Yep. Yeah.
But you also when did you start the modeling thing? Wasn't that in high school?
Yeah, that was high school. And that was my junior year in high school. So that was quite, quote unquote, late in life. But, looking back, I think that caused quite a bit of contention and probably quite a few parental arguments in allowing me to do that.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah, that was not something that one half of my parental unit wanted me to do. There were other thoughts that I should have been doing other things. But
you know, it's funny, I live in the South. Oklahoma is very much in the South for this perspective. I had a lot of pressure when Lexi was a baby to put her in pageant. And I'm like, get thee back with that heresy. Hell no. Yes, my baby girl is gorgeous. She is. Even I can see that. But that is not what I want to accentuate about this girl. And I took a lot of heat for that.
She should be very grateful and thankful that you did that.
Yeah, well.
That is not.
She's grateful and thankful, but I don't know that she's grateful and thankful about that. But I don't know that she really has. I don't even honestly know if she knows that, to be quite frank. It might be when she listens to this, she might go, what? And then I'll find out today what the today Lexi would have wished for. But, you know, back then, I was really adamant that while, yeah, she could have taken the pageant world by storm as a 2-year-old, I mean, because she was freaking cute. Oh, my God.
I have seen.
But I don't know that I just was not willing to risk what that might do to her development of self. And that was pretty rocky anyway, given the situation we had at home and the chaos that was totally ruling our household. In some ways, I think that may have given her an anchor to hang on to, but at the same time, what a flimsy anchor. How you look? Yeah. Really? No.
How you look, how you act, and to be exposed to not necessarily the other kids, but the other kids' parents doing the mindset number on you, trying to build you up for failure because you're not good enough. You're not pretty enough. Oh, you have that on? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
A 5-year-old, 6-year-old, they don't need that crap.
Yeah. I submit juniors in high school don't need that crap either.
And neither does anybody. Nobody needs that crap.
Yeah.
But sadly, that's the judgment that, and the superficialness that so many people have because they are that insane.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've, as you know, began dating again at my advanced age.
I'm even a little bit more advanced than you.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you one thing is for sure. When you pass a certain age, and I'm not quite sure what age I would say it is, but the term boyfriend no longer applies. That is just most terrible word.
Not really, because sometimes I do refer to my guy,
mm-hmm.
boyfriend, although he refers to Siri on my phone as my boyfriend because I have the male voice. So can you ask him how to get somewhere, or can you ask your boyfriend? Yes, I can.
I just rail at that when I'm being introduced or I'm introducing him to someone. I hate that word.
I do not use that word simply because it is a more youthful kind of euphemism, maybe. So I will introduce him as my partner, my guy.
Yeah.
Use this is my man, because I think that kind of is right up there with boyfriend. I for different reasons, but I just am not comfortable with that. So he's my partner, or sometimes my significant other.
Yeah.
I don't introduce him as my boy.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. And I had a thought. I got distracted. I distracted myself with the boyfriend issue because I had a whole other thing that I was trying to ask you. I wonder if I'm going to,
We're doing the dating thing about entering.
Oh, yes. Now I remember. Thank you. So we were talking about looks and pageants and being judged on how you look. And, you know, I've been overweight most of my adult life. And here in the last few years, I have dropped a bunch, which has been good. But I've always known, and I mean, I have eyes. I can see in the mirror. I'm not going to scare small children out in public. I am a fairly attractive woman of 57 years of age. I can see that for myself. And when I am here lately getting a lot of effusive confirmation of, oh, you're beautiful. Oh, you're so gorgeous. Hey, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're missing the best part of me focusing on that.
But that's what people see first before you even open your mouth, before you even say anything. Your face is what they see.
Yeah, I know, but still, it just irks me. It irks me so much. And it's not with people that I'm just meeting that it irks me. It's when it's used as a salve for what I'm riled up about. Like, I get agitated about something and I'll be told, oh, well, darling, you're so gorgeous. You know that? And I'm like,
Yeah. Don't even go there with me. That just pisses me off even more. No, don't go there with me. Just stop.
Yeah. And I'm met with such, when I react that way, I'm met with such, what? I was trying to be nice. And I know that's probably true. But at some point, you have to become, if you're going to be in relationship, you've got to learn, not only have to teach your preferences, but you've got to learn the other ones and find the two of you a place in the middle where nobody's getting particularly chafed and nobody's unduly, you know, idolized.
Right. You cannot diffuse a situation with trying to affirm someone's personal appearance, because to me, that's almost a narcissistic approach, trying to turn the situation in your favor.
Not only that, but jerk the other person into your perspective.
Right. And it's, well, part of what a narcissist does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't try and control me like that.
Yeah. Boy. Can you imagine the number of people would hear us talking about this and be like, who said anything about trying to control you? Since when is paying you a compliment trying to control you? Oh, it's thinking.
Yeah, when you're trying to change, when you're trying to diffuse my passion in expressing myself to something so trivial as my looks,
mm-hmm.
Looks are more important than how I feel. And it's more important than me expressing how I feel to, so that past this little, and it
whatever,
may,
yeah.
But yeah, don't try and change. Don't try and the subject. Don't try and with something.
I always feel patronized.
Yes.
Like, don't pat me on the head and tell me I'm pretty.
Yeah, no.
I'm not a zoo animal, nor am I a pinup model on the wall.
Nor am I someone who is so simple.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. There it is. Kim for the win. She found it.
Little bit more complex than that. Thank you.
Oh, man.
There's the door.
You know, I have this, I feel like I have to have this disclaimer. Look, I'm a handful and I know it. And I'm not changing that anytime soon. Be warned, all ye who enter here, you know, and for the most part.
But that handful is so expressive and is such a wonderful explanation of who you are. Just let you be you. I mean,
you know, I've been thinking a lot about the word selfish and selfishness, and because I'm okay, if I believe, as I do, that happiness is determined by the decisions we make, the quality of our lives is determined by the decisions we make for ourselves. We have no one else to thank or blame for our state of happiness, because unless we're abdicating our power by playing the victim, or
I can't be happy without you, or
yeah, which is victimhood.
Right on. I mean, I can be happy with you, I can be happy without you. So anyway, yes, you have that choice.
Yeah, and if you believe that, you know, if you focus only on those four things I mentioned, your thoughts, your words, your deeds, and your reactions. First of all, I submit that's a full freaking time job for any human, period, end of story. You know, if you're going to commit to those four things and truly doing a good job of managing them, you ain't got time for anybody else's crap.
That's probably why we're in lives.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to do that.
Well, I was going to say, it's hard to do in one time, in one lifetime, or even in one.
It is. But I think that's why we're here. I think that's like, if everybody, what other word is there to describe the act and idea of deciding what you want and then making decisions that steer your life in that direction? If that's not selfish and self-driven, what is? Yet selfishness is such a, like, you're so selfish, like it's a bad thing. Yes, people can be selfish, but I submit to you, what we know as selfish are the people who are ignoring those four things and trying to control everything other than those four things.
To their benefit.
Yes. Yes.
We are allowed to be selfish. We have to learn to be selfish.
Yeah.
Does that mean we are selfish to a point of hurting someone else and in belligerence or on purpose? No. But we have to learn to be selfish, be able to create our own space of happiness with ourselves.
Yeah, and I say, you know what? If I'm not worried about you and I'm not taking ownership of your happiness, because I can't affect that for you. But if I delude myself, as I spent a very good long time in my life thinking this way, that I could, in fact, not only influence it, but control it by what I did. First of all, that leads me down a path of inauthenticity, because I've become the version of me that you want to see, not the real me. And secondarily, you don't have a relationship with me anymore. You've got a relationship with this facade who is not me. I'm not happy because I'm not directing my life. I've handed over my agency in my life. So I'm like, wait a minute. If I don't do it that way, if I just decide, hey, Suze, you want to have your little house and you want to have a nice backyard to chill in.
But yes, if you want to have your little house there and you...
Then I can do that. And I can make decisions. If that makes me happy, it's within my purview to do that. And how I spend my time is my choice. And who I allow in my life, in relationships with me, is my choice. And I'm not obligated by anyone or anything to do anything that I'm not okay with, that I don't say yes to. Killing part for me is when I look backward, I spent so much time trying to morph myself into that version of Suzanne that they wanted, be it at work, be it in relationship at home, to some extent, even as my kid's mother. I was so not paying attention to who I wanted to be. Who was this creature waking up every morning in my body, in my brain, in my heart? I was a pinball. I was reacting, not acting much at all. I was reacting to everything around me. And that took up all of my time. I was spending zero time on those four things. What I say, you know, controlling what I say, what I think, what I do, and how I react. It was a free-for-all. It was like I was the pinball in a pinball machine. And
or a puppet on a string.
Yeah, that's another great analogy.
Marionette.
Yeah. And so as a recovering people pleaser, it's been no small feat. What?
Is that what you are?
Oh yeah. I'm in recovery. I'm not clean yet. It still drives too much of my thinking. It doesn't drive a lot of my actions anymore because I kind of cut it off at the pass, but boy, it's still in my head a lot more than I like. But I'm not being mean to myself about it anymore. I recognize it and say, yeah, no, honey, that's not how that works, you know? And most of the time I get by it without having to engage. It's rarely my motivation for what I do or say anymore, which is great. But I think, you know, if everybody would do life this way, we'd all be all right. People would line up, people would group up according to common interests and common perspectives and common world views.
We'd certainly be much more well-equipped, be able to live amongst other people without being so reactive.
Yeah, because my value is not derived from your opinion of what I like, you know? And I didn't know that for a long time. Now I do know that. So I'm not triggered when someone disagrees with me the way I used to be, because I don't need you to affirm my stance. I'm solid in it. You're free to have your own. Yours being different from mine takes nothing away from mine.
And if people are as solid in their beliefs and their ability to allow others to have and recognize other beliefs, we would, again, be in a much better state to exist amongst ourselves.
Yeah, boy. There's a lot, there are a lot of forces working against us in that, not least often our own selves. We are often our own worst enemies in all this.
And I will agree with that too. And again, because we have so many others that are pushing on us and pulling on us to be something different than what we feel inside.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone there are so many people that feel more comfortable being able to control a person and their actions and reactions than being able to understand and try and experience their truth.
Yeah.
Because their truth might be different.
Yeah, that's for sure. And isn't it crazy how, as I listen to you say that, what my brain is hearing is two ways to talk about the same thing.
I want to know. It's like, tell me more.
Yeah.
Understand the differences. I want to see the differences. Tell me.
Yeah. You know, I saw somewhere, probably on Facebook, it's the only place I see stuff like this. Saw somebody say once, and probably posted it on my wall too, because it really resonated with me. To the degree that I love my decisions, I don't need you to love them.
And that's really all it boils down to. You don't have, you shouldn't need anyone else to affirm your decision.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a large part of me that wishes I could take this me that I am now, who is an amalgamation of all those years of all those experiences, where some of which I would really give my teeth for a do-over. But take this me that is the result of all of that and let her rewind and do things with the knowledge I have now. Like, I feel like when I think about, you know, my parents are both gone now. Yours are too, right?
Yeah.
I feel a real cool breeze at the top of the family tree with nobody up there besides, you know, I'm at the top of the family tree now, at least on this end of it. And I don't necessarily call that feeling my mortality, except that, yeah, that's a version of it, because I look and I think, well, both my parents died at 75 years old in their 75th year. I'm 57. Oh, crap. That's not a lot of time if I go when they do. Not that I'm, you know, but if I did, holy cow, I've got a whole lifetime of stuff that I want to do and see and know and experience and learn and all of that with this me, with this version of me, this one who sees myself and others this way versus the before me, you know? It makes me agitated to think about that. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but.
But you can pack so much life in such a short amount of time.
Oh, you are correct about that.
That would not concern me. That is how I would look at it. That is how I would deal if I, now you're going to make me think, but.
And I don't know, you know, somebody said to me, I said that to them and they said, well, maybe that's just a function of your parents are gone. You don't have anybody that you feel like is sitting, looking at you and what you're doing and how you're living your life and saying, eh, wrong, or eh, no, you should have done this, or eh, that wasn't right. But I don't know that I truly don't think that I have been, especially where my parents are concerned, I don't think that I've been, let me start 17 sentences at once. See if I can finish one of them.
Do it again.
I will cop to the fact that a good chunk of my early adult life was nothing more than a reaction on my part to the opposite of what my parents said or told me I should do or should be or whatever. I know. You're just like, oh, I can't believe that, Suzanne. Oh, yes, it's true. And I can cop to it now. And I'd like to believe that my abhorrence of the middle of the road that I've lived most of my life leading up to now with present in my mind is gone now, because I really believe that I've been a pendulum swinging from one extreme to another based on what I get myself into and how I cope with that. And that the real me is in the middle of the road where actually that too is has a milquetoast kind of connotation to it. Like you're not.
Circle. You're the whole ball of wax. There's no, even that person way out there and the person on the other opposite end of the pendulum swing, that encompasses all that you are. Don't sell yourself short.
I wasn't thinking of it in terms of selling myself short. This is why I like talking to you, because this is where our differences show up in our perspectives. And I'm like, hold up, I didn't say that, but that's what you heard. So now I'm thinking about that perspective.
But did you not say that you, from one perspective to the other, you want to like cut that out? And I mean, that's who you are. All of that is who you are. That's what made you who you are. Without those.
Yes.
Without those experiences, you wouldn't be here today. You would not be the person you are today.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're right about that. But I think that if I'm, you know that phrase, oh, I got to go find myself. I think that the pieces of me that I've found have been found in the middle. It's not one extreme or another. The real me exists. All of that is in me. So I'm like the absolute value of all of that, you know, not negative, not positive.
Are the sum of the total. Yes, I will agree with that. Walking away for it. You are the sum of the total, but you would not be the colorful, passionate, explosive person that you are today if you did not have all of those experiences. I would not know you as that person. You'd be like, oh, there's, yep, right there in the middle, boring old Suzanne. That's how I think of it. So in finding yourself, finding yourself in the middle is like drawing that line and being right there at that line. There's nothing way up here, nothing way down here. It's just a straight line.
Okay, so here's another picture, Kim.
All right. Wait on.
Everything's a circle, right? And I am in the middle of this ball of circles traveling around me, and they are all my extremes, good or bad. Okay. But the real me is in the middle, that middle, not on a line, but in the middle of, because anything taken to an extreme becomes the opposite of itself, and you take that to the extreme, you find yourself back at the other thing. Vice and virtue, there are a lot of things that we call vices that are really virtues run amok. Something taken too far becomes a vice.
I don't think so. I don't think something taken too far is a vice. I am going to jump out there and disagree with that, because without jumping out there and experiencing the other side, whether it's virtuous or a vice, you would not know which one you want. You would not know the power of the experience.
That's true, but that's not what I said.
I still
a virtue, let's say, to be nurturing and to care for others in visceral ways. That's a virtue by most people's standards. But too much of that to the expense of caring for yourself becomes a vice. It's no longer good. It's no longer a good thing. It becomes detrimental to you, maybe not to the other person, but it becomes detrimental to you. So the things that we think that are good qualities about us, I have in my lifetime, in my adult life, gone way too far with, and people pleasing was one of them, way too far turning myself into pretzel knots over trying to.
You didn't do that for yourself. You did that for somebody else.
That's my point. People, that quality of extending myself to nurture and care for others and put them first becomes a vice when I don't do it at all for myself. So that virtue, run amok, taken to the extreme, becomes a vice.
But that virtue, when it comes from your heart and you truly want to do that for yourself, for that other person, that doesn't make it a vice.
The for yourself part is the part that was missing when I was taking it to the extreme. And that's what makes it a vice.
But in doing that, it still makes you who you are today. And had you not experienced that, you would not have taken the steps to understand and be the person that you are today. Selfish that you are.
Yes. And I'm quite proud to be called selfish, because that is a compliment in my world now. And my response to that, on the very few occasions anybody's had the balls to say that just like that to my face, I'm like, I invite you to try it. That's my response these days. Yeah, I am. You should try it.
See, no one, my circle is so small, nobody tells me I'm selfish. That's a plus. Maybe that's the least. And there it is, seeing the positives and the negatives. You are an amazing person in everything that you have lifted yourself out of, empowered yourself, and created for yourself. I think you are one of the most amazing people that I know.
Oh, thanks. But let's not forget, all that shit I lifted myself up out of was stuff I created with my own decisions as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still get points for reversing it. I know.
in, you know, not necessarily reversing, but acknowledging and lifting yourself up out of, creating.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So tell me something, Miss Kim. What's the best thing about being you?
About being me? I don't have to be like anybody else anymore. I have finally realized that I don't have to be like anybody else.
Your uniqueness. Yay. What's the worst thing about being you?
There's only one me. If I could come myself and do all these things that I want to do, I could maybe do them all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. What's the thing you're most proud of in your life so far?
Being here today.
Say more.
Being here today.
Not again, Kim. More. Different words. Expand on that. Being here.
It's like with you, in the whole circle, in the extremes, I'm here today.
Gotcha.
The choices, I could be a lot of places, but I'm here today. And I'm happy here today, for the most part. I mean, there are a few things I might change, but for the most part, I wake up grateful and blessed.
Well, that's a great way to wake up. That's for sure.
When I remind myself, sometimes I wake up and, you know, it's like, oh my God, 4:00. What the hell am I doing up right now? Oh, I'm up right now. Yay me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, woman. We could keep everybody on here forever and ever, but we should probably wrap it up for today. Thank you so much, because I love talking about stuff like this, and
I love you too.
Yeah, I love you right back, girly. You're awesome.
Thank you. And it's always so enlightening, because talking with you gives me a whole new vantage point on the horizon when I look out the window and see all the new possibilities and all the new twists and turns of things that I can think about differently now. And you shine a different light on the world, that's for sure.
I can cop to that. Yep. And it's on purpose these days, so that's kind of cool too.
Right on. And it's a light that only you have. And yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Oh gosh, life is good, isn't it?
Yep. Today it's very good. And even when it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Yep. I agree.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.